Our guest in the studio today, Vytautas Smetona, playing a piece of his. He is going to be traveling up to Sandpoint in the Idaho Panhandle and appearing there. First of all, he's going to be giving a masterclass this coming Saturday at the Sandpoint Conservatory and then giving a concert at the Heartwood Center on Sunday. And Vytautas, welcome to Spokane Public Radio.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Jim, and thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's indeed our pleasure. And you started off, you played for us there one of your own compositions. Tell us a bit about it.
Fantasy was completed in August of 2015. The work is, it's a fantasy. It's free form, but it does have a definite form. It almost follows the structure of a fugue, where you have expositions of the theme and then episodes, and then the theme returns in episodes, except this time that follows that general pattern, but it closes with a lengthy fugue. I'd say my inspirations for this, not in a motivic or a thematic sense, but in general concepts, were I think the opening prelude from Wagner's Tristan und Isolde, this sense of organic growth. It just develops and grows. Of course, the Mozart's great C minor piano fantasy, that was an inspiration for me too, like tying in these apparently disparate things, which really aren't that disparate if you look deeply. And another one for the sense of true fantasy and imagination was the second movement from the great Schubert posthumous A major sonata. Like, he just goes like, when you listen to it, they go, my goodness, this is strange, but it's profound. Mm-hmm. And I think I would say one thing about the great music versus not so great music. You know, in the not so great music, the relationships are really obvious, like straight repetition or changing the key and repeating. In the great music, you say to yourself, you know, I know this is related somehow. I sense it, but I can't put my finger on it. Mm-hmm. And if you dig deeply, that's where, you know, the composer is presented with a problem and he has to dig deep down to come up with a very creative solution. And the brilliant solutions are the ones that really result in masterpieces.
No, it put me in a frame of mind, especially some of the sections in the middle, where then you come back to home again.
Exactly. It everything was based on about the first six or seven bars.
Right.
Everything in the fugue, everything was, I tried to make it a very tight piece of work.
What it brought to mind for me was the old Baroque style. The fantasy style,
yes.
Where you would take these wild flights of fantasy,
yes, exactly.
And then come back to a section
exactly.
That was very
that was
strictly
the,
structured.
That was the motivation. So I'm working on a piano sonata right now, actually.
Okay.
And that one I'm even making a little tighter. I'm trying to base everything on one bar, like 12 to 14 notes, and all the movements will be related. So it's going to be an introduction. And then what I've done certain things like, sometimes I look at this theme and I thought, what would happen if I take certain notes out? I did that and it totally changes the character. And like, if you heard that, you'd say, my goodness, I know it's somehow related, but I can't put my mm-hmm. finger on it. Suddenly the rhythms change, the relationships change. Sometimes you put a note back, sometimes you pull something out. But it's a funny thing. Typically, if you start composition, the first thing a composer teacher will give you is, okay, write a theme and variations, because really all music is variation. And as Mendelssohn said, the challenge is to keep it the same, yet to make it different.
Mm-hmm. You come by your trade, honestly, because your mother was a pianist.
Yes, she was. My mother had, she was a very musical person, and she was a music teacher. And one thing which she really excelled in is the ability to bring out the sensitivity and appreciation of beauty from her students. Her training was, she started off very much in the Russian school, having been born in Lithuania. She had a Russian pianist by the name of Witold Ruzhitsky, who was her first teacher, but then she went to Paris. She studied with Robert Casadesus, the great French pianist, then with Yves Nott a little bit, another great French pianist. Then in the United States, she worked extensively with one of the great Arthur Schnabel disciples, Leonard Schur. And I had the benefit of receiving that tradition through a filter without having to deal with maybe the not-so-nice things that accompany it. But she knew the Schnabel method really, really well, the whole approach to music, the grouping of things, the concept of leading and falling and maintaining levels, and just the whole structural, the internal structural approach. So that is, it's something which I mean, I just absorbed it. And then my brother was a pianist as well. He studied with my mother, and he studied for years in Cleveland with Leonard Schur. Then Leonard Schur relocated to New York. He studied with him there. And then he went on and he finished the Manus College of Music, where his teacher was Nadia Reisenberg. And then he studied with Rosina Levine at the Juilliard School. So I received a pretty good filter, you know, where the whole different traditions where, you know, the Russian school focuses, I think, much more on competence and performance, beautiful sound, beautiful pedaling, but perhaps not such an emphasis on structure, where Schnabel was much more on the structure and the inherent spirit of the music and, you know, technical considerations. Well, yeah, so what? You know, so it was a very good training. And for composition, I studied twice with a Cleveland composer who had a very strong background. He studied with Howard Hanson at the Eastman School of Music, and he received his doctorate from Yale University. A gentleman by the name of Starling Cumberworth, who is now long deceased. One of his better known works was the opera called Home Burial. So when I was a little kid, he was at the Cleveland Music School Settlement. I studied theory with him and some composition. And then years later, I was like in my early 20s, I said, you know, I want to do this and I want to do it seriously. So I studied with him for about 3 years, fugue, canon, counterpoint. And I have one work which I finished years ago, but I'm not 100% happy with it. It's called Canonic Variations in Fugue on an Original Theme for String Quintet. It's kind of a modeled after Bach's musical offering, where every variation is a different canon, including the canon concursans, where the melodies go in opposite directions from the beginning to the end of the variation, and it ends with a five-part fugue. I think it's pretty good. My only concern is I don't think the fugue was massive enough for that work. So this summer, after having written a couple of fugues, I'm going to go back and rework that, and I'd like to try to hopefully, you know, practice and perform less and really focus on a composition this summer and crank those two things out.
You left music for a while, and you went off and seriously pursued other things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then you came back.
Correct.
I guess I'm curious why you, well, you never totally leave music.
No, that's true.
But you can put a career on hold. You can move things aside and move on.
Yes. You know, when I started out, I was, you know, not unaware of the challenges of a musical career. Many of them are well known, the political aspect. The other thing which really struck me was the insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could be having a pretty successful career, and the next moment, you no longer
have a
career.
The diva or the divo of the moment appears.
Well, and you know, that whole thing has intensified since I left. So what I thought to myself is this, look, my focus is I taught music for years, and I really want to be able to make my living as an itinerant virtuoso. If it becomes clear to me that by the age of 30, it's unlikely that I'll be able to do that securely, I'm out. Because I don't want to end up being a philanthropist. You know, can you spare a dollar for a hamburger? and it's not only that, but, you know, being financially insecure and being at the mercy of others is not a great situation. So it became clear to me that was going to it was not going to happen. I went back to graduate school. I got degrees in operations research and mathematics. I was very interested in mathematics. And by that time, I was already in my early 30s, and I thought, you know, I'd like an academic career. I had part-time positions at community colleges teaching math. But
itself is kind of a dead-end street as well. You can keep going from adjunct to adjunct.
You know,
position.
It is, and I'll tell you something else. Academia is no joke. I mean, I knew an absolutely brilliant Polish mathematician. You know, some people get a PhD in math, but they don't do much. I mean, they don't really come up with any striking results. Well, he came up with a striking counterexample to prove that something was not the case. I mean, he got notice in the mathematical world that this was very significant. Well, he got a tenure track position at a significant research university, and I spoke with him. He said, very political. He didn't get tenure. He was a brilliant mathematician. There were people who were even close to him who were getting tenure. He didn't. Some were like him and did get tenure, and he ended up just bouncing around. I mean, it's not a secure, stable field either. For some it is, for some it isn't. If you're a political animal, I guess it's better. If you're not, it's worse. But no, I came to the conclusion that it's not looking good. I will be honest, I kind of noticed, even by then in the early 80s, kind of a declining level of interest in the arts and in art music. And I'd say here we are 30-some years later, I think it's gotten worse, and I made a great decision, in my opinion. Like, think of it now. I haven't even kept up with this, but there's like, what, hundreds of international piano competitions.
Oh, yeah.
So you win a competition, depending how big it is, you have a career for 1 or 2 years, and then after that, if you don't get reengaged, you are in trouble. So I'm going to get a music position at a university. Sorry, there aren't that many there. You know, I had a funny story about this. Two things. I had two opportunities, which I refused because I went back to graduate school. One, my manager, one of his artists, was a silver medalist at the Van Cliburn competition. He took ill in the spring of 83, and he had a recital series in the Pacific Northwest. He said, hey, you want to substitute for him? So it was a good opportunity. And I already made my commitment to go back to school, and I wasn't going to just uproot myself. And then shortly before that, I had an opportunity to go play the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto to substitute for an artist who was having some issues. And like on 2 days' notice, I had played it in July, and this is like February. I hadn't kept it up, and I could not play it in 2 days' notice. I had a decline. But it's funny, some of these guys, you think about, my goodness, they're doing really well. Well, my kids were tennis players. So one time, we're up in Lansing, Michigan. And, you know, I said, well, listen, in between matches, let's go practice. They all say, we went to the practice rooms, and I'm going down the hall, and I see this door with a little sign. I had this cobwebs, and I blow it off, and I won't mention the name, but this was a very famous competition winner, and he was out there in the back hall in Michigan State, and you know what? He probably was lucky he had that position. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing stories now of people who've won multiple international competitions who are struggling to get work. So it's a combination of there's this constant flood of, you know, competition winners who are given all these concerts, and when they're done, that's it. And a declining level of interest. It's not a good situation. So I'm glad I did it. Now, I'll say one thing. There is pressure to conform when you're trying to get ahead. They'll say, well, if you play like this, no one will engage you. If you play like this, you won't win the competition. If you write music like this, no one will perform. And I say, I don't care. So what? You know, I'll do it my way. I'm interested. I'm a music lover. If it goes well, fine. If it doesn't go well, fine. Maybe I'm like Charles Ives, you know? He was in the actuarial department of a insurance company. So you don't know how things are going to work out. I'm glad I did it, and I think artistically I am further ahead having done that. I think my playing is more interesting now than it was 30 years ago. I don't know if I ever would have developed, been able to start composing, and I kind of like what I'm doing, and I'd like to keep doing it and spend more time on it.
So you have your own business, and at the same time, you balance along with it your performance.
Yeah, not easy. Yeah. I came back officially in 2015. I mm-hmm. started kicking it around a lot more, and it was difficult to get up to speed again. You know, it reminds me of a story of Rachmaninoff, and he was offered the music directorship of the Boston Symphony, and he refused, and they said, why? I said, look, I want to play. I love playing. But every time I conduct and I take some time off from the piano, my arms kill me. And I noticed that you're not used to practicing, and suddenly, say, you're trying to learn a difficult Chopin etude. Let's, pianist, how about Opus 10 number 1 or Opus 10 number 2? Try to play that, see what happens, or try to play Liszt Fofolet and see what happens. I mean, you can't learn it too fast. You've got to be patient and practice mm-hmm. gradually mm-hmm. till you build it up. But it's a real issue of not playing. I constantly had ice on my arms till they got used to it again. But it was tough getting back, just getting competence back, getting my arms, being able to used to practicing a lot. But I started doing it more and more, and I recorded a CD. I released it in 2015, and it met with, I think, remarkably favorable reviews. I gave a number of recitals in 2015 in Florida, Ohio, and New York, and the New York recital received a better review than I ever received in my life. It was remarkably positive, and it was like, you know, here he is. He returns out of the cave. You know, the backstory's fascinating. But I try to balance both, and it's nice because I, you know, how many musicians can say I answer to no one? I mean,
that's a good thing.
I answer to no one. I mean, luckily I have an independent source of income. I'd like to perform more, but you know, another thing which I hope I don't get caught up with, there are a number of pianists who I think would have been pretty interesting composers. I'll name three: Arthur Schnabel, Vladimir Horowitz, and Glenn Gould. Now, Glenn Gould did write an extensive string quartet. I wasn't particularly fond of it. I don't think it was a great piece of music. It kind of just was dry and lacked inspiration. But they all said, I wanted to compose, but they couldn't. You know, Gould said, I'm going to retire and start just conducting and composing. Never happened.
Never happened. Yeah.
Horowitz wrote a lot of pieces, but no, I mean, it becomes an all-consuming thing playing the piano. It's very difficult just to be competent. And so luckily, I hope I don't end up in that track where suddenly I'm flooded with engagements and you can't say no, and I don't have a financial reason to do that. So this summer, I am knocking those two pieces off, and I hope to get them recorded and released.
Well, look forward to hearing those. And how is it that you come to be with us for this weekend?
That's interesting. You know, I started an artist management LLC, and I thought, look, when you start a business, you better be able to sell. And I started kicking the tires at the artist management. So I think, you know what? I can probably do a better job than they can and not charge myself anything for it. So we got the lay of the land pretty quickly, figured out all the concert series, the festivals, and started sending out publicity materials. Well, lo and behold, I got an engagement at the El Dorado Community Concert Series in Placerville, California. On a business-related trip, and completely serendipitously, I was in Sandpoint, Idaho. And someone mentions to me, you know, we have a music conservatory. This person was a business colleague, and her daughter was very interested in music and was thinking of going to Oberlin College, which is close to Cleveland. She played the violin. I said, are you serious? They have a music conservatory in Sandpoint? Population of 7,000, like 75 miles away from any kind of a city of any substantial size? Yes. I was really impressed with that. So I started talking and I said, look, you know, I'd love to do a benefit for this. These are real music lovers. And we threw in a masterclass. So, you know, hopefully I'll have something to offer, and hopefully we'll have some, you know, brilliant students as well, or at least very interesting who are music lovers. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was just a wonderful oasis of culture in an area where really with a very sparse population, you usually think there needs to be a certain critical mass before you can have a conservatory. You would think maybe if it's a city of 7,000 like Greenwich, Connecticut, yeah, they could have a conservatory when they're 20 miles away from New York City, but not something like that. So I thought that was really interesting. And it was, you know, it seems to have been spawned almost more just of a love for music than any kind of mercenary considerations. Mm-hmm. You know, people mm-hmm. are music lovers. It's beautiful. Let's share it and enjoy it. You know?
So let's get to the concert that you're going to give, which is on Sunday afternoon.
Yes, I think it's 5 o'clock, okay. 5 or 5:30.
And it's in a lovely, lovely space, the Heartwood Center.
Oh, it looks beautiful.
And what are you playing?
Very interesting program, at least in my opinion. I am playing the great Mozart A minor sonata, K310. It's, in my opinion, again, I don't think all of Mozart's piano sonatas did justice to his talent. This one did. It's a very emotional work, the first one in a minor key. And just to get a sense how emotional it is, I haven't seen a single Mozart sonata almost which has a fortissimo indication. But this had fortissimo immediately followed by pianissimo. Very striking and strong emotional content. So that's a wonderful piece of music. Next, I'm playing another tremendous work, the Brahms F minor piano sonata, Opus 5, featuring, in the words of Alfred Cortot, the greatest love song ever written. The second movement's beautiful. I think Clara Schumann was in his mind when he wrote that. But he wrote three piano sonatas at the age of 19 to 20. The first two are out there in the canon of the repertoire, but I don't think they would have gotten him to be one of the three Bs. The third is an absolute masterpiece. We have intermission followed by the Smetona Fantasy and then a group of Chopin works, the Waltz in A minor, Etude Opus 10, number 8 in F major, the beautiful Mazurka Opus 59, number 3, very profound work, and the great F minor Ballade, Opus 52.
That sounds like a wonderful, wonderful program. And again, that's this weekend in Sandpoint. The Saturday morning masterclass is at the Sandpoint Conservatory.
Correct.
On Main Street.
9 a.m.
And then on Oak Street on Sunday afternoon for your recital. Well, Vytautas Smetona, thank you so much for coming our way and also for dropping
pleasure.
By.
Jim, it is my pleasure. It's a beautiful city, and thank you so much for having me.
All right. It's been our pleasure to talk with Vytautas Smetona. And again, he will be in Sandpoint this weekend performing and giving a masterclass. We're going to go back to performance today at this point and listen to something that Vern was talking about this morning, which is some music by Malcolm Arnold. Enjoy.